into the frozen earth. For a moment he left it there, the thonged hilt sodden with fresh blood. He straightened up, looking around to make sure no more muties were around the entrance to the redoubt. The wind still howled and snow flurries obscured the view. He suddenly remembered the two monstrous white bears that he'd seen a few minutes ago and decided that it might be safer inside. He pulled the panga clear of the dead mutie's skull, wiped it on the creature's fur jacket, and slipped it back into its sheath. He saw the lapa lying on the stones, a dusting of snow already building up around it. With a shrug, he left it there and turned back to the door, punching in the return code of 596, then the H. Nothing happened for a breath-stopping moment. Then the vanadium steel swung open, and Ryan returned to the warmth and security of the redoubt. Back in their living quarters, the first person he saw was JB. The armorer looked impassively at Ryan's torn and blood-soaked clothes and came as close as he ever did to a smile.
Did you get enough fresh air, Ryan?
More than enough.
Predictably, it was J.B. Dix who discovered the Museum of Arms and Armaments.
I can smell guns. I followed the scent of oil and steel and lead and grease and brass. Found it up on top level. Even got obslets. Can see for miles.
See what?
Nothing much. Snow. A couple of volcanoes north and east. Sky's full of chem clouds and general nuke shit. A lot of yellow from the Smokies, I guess. Come and see it.
Ryan grunted in reply but didn't move, continuing to eat in silence, oblivious to the rest of the group. Something peculiar was happening in the redoubt. Three of the microwaves had already stopped working. Several of the sealed clothes stores that Quint had allowed them to open were showing signs of rapid deterioration, with garments becoming frayed and actually rotting. The water purifying plant in their dormitory had started to malfunction, sometimes providing a thin green scummy liquid that smelled of death. Ryan had talked about this with JB only the night before, and they'd agreed that the redoubt and stockpile had been sealed against outsiders for so many years that their presence had upset the delicate balance of the machinery. Quint was obviously aware of it and kept asking them when they were going to leave. Yet oddly, some of them got the feeling that he didn't want them to go. They finished their evening meal, chucking the disposable plates and cutlery down the garbage chute. Finn paused by the sliding panel for a moment, listening.
Huh. Fucking funny noises down there. Like rocks grinding against each other.
With JB leading the way, they left the dining room and headed for the Armaments Museum, marking their progress on their own maps. From ingrained caution, they paused at every turn of the corridor. They saw no sign of Quint, Rachel, or Lori as they advanced quietly up to the top of the stockpile.
Here.
JB put his hand against an illuminated rectangle set flush in the wall to the right of a door. The door slid silently open, revealing a foyer. On the wall, there was a sign.
Do not touch exhibits. Ammo filed beneath under cross-refs.
Look over there.
Ryan pointed to another sign, hand-painted, not neatly printed like the other one.
It's nice to come if you've got your pass, but if you don't, we'll bust your ass.
The double doors at the far side of the foyer had small circles of glass set in their tops. Ryan pushed them open, stopping so suddenly that Hennings walked into him.
Fireblast!
What the... Oh, fucking hell.
The museum stretched out ahead of them, dim lights brightening in the large hall as sensors detected their presence. It wasn't the array of weapons that caught everyone's eyes. It was what was nailed to the floor just in front of them. All of them recognized it as the mummified corpse of a young child. Either it had been assembled by a crazed and skillful surgeon, or it was one of the worst mutations that any of them had ever seen. Despite the dried, leathery skin, it was possible to make out scars from what had once been suppurating sores all over the body. The umbilical cord dangled like a knotted brown string, and a shrunken penis revealed the original sex of the child. Though it looked to be only a few weeks old, it had a full set of needle-sharp teeth, and its fingernails were long and curved like claws. Ryan counted 9 fingers on the right hand. The left hand sprouted from near the shoulder. It looked like a little paddle of lacy skin and had at least a dozen fingers on it. The legs were less than 3 inches in length, ending in toes that lacked nails. At the shoulders, there were the stubs of what looked like the wings of a prehistoric flying reptile. The crucified baby had two heads, one with only a residual stump of a skull, hardly visible in the shadows. The ribs were appallingly distorted, running more from top to bottom than from side to side, and the pelvis was strangely tilted, obscenely large for the rest of the torso. A long, thin dagger with a hilt of twisted silver wire was pushed through the crossed feet. A second blade pinned the right hand. A third was pressed through the scrawny throat. Blood darkened the tiles all around the body. Hunniker touched it with the toe of her new tan boots, watching it crumble to powder.
Been here for years. Decades, probably. Might be more of them.
There was a message that had apparently been scrawled with a finger, using blood that was still warm and fresh. The words misspelled and the letters clumsy, it was difficult to read, but clearly a warning. Keep out forever or die. It was signed, the Keeper.
Christy, I thought you said Quinn couldn't read or write.
That's true, although this is hardly proper English.
Guess not. So if he's as fucking old as he looks and he's the Keeper, who was the Keeper who wrote this?
JB pushed past him.
Who cares, friend? Let's go look at some guns.
And what guns they were. Some of them were at least 300 years old, looking frail and dusty inside cases of plexiglass. The party split up to wander around, and the huge room echoed with their cries of amazement at the wonders. Ryan walked with Christy and JB. It wasn't just a boggling array of blasters. There were all kinds of daggers and swords and axes. Many of the guns had descriptive cards under them. One card read, "Pair English flintlock night pistols, circa 1712, made in England by James Freeman. Screw barrel guns fired buckshot instead of conventional ball, making it easier to hit a target at night, hence their name."
What kind of range would that have, JB?
I guess about 20 feet on a good day or night.
In the next case was a delicate sword with a blade that tapered to a needle point. The card read, "English small sword, officers, circa 17.